Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Before we start, this episode has some explicit language and mentions sexual violence and might not be suitable for all listeners. On the tip-off, we hear from expert journalists from all over the world. People who have dedicated their lives to trying to tell unreported stories honestly and with an objective distance. But there are some stories that warrant a different approach. I'm Maeve McLennigan. This is The Tip-Off. I've written about homelessness and housing issues for years. I even wrote a book, No Fixed Abode, about one of my investigations. So I was fascinated when I heard that one amazing homelessness support organisation was delving into the world of journalism itself.
My name's Jenny McNeil. I'm the project manager for the Listen Up project at Groundswell. Groundswell works with people with experience of homelessness, and we offer opportunities to contribute to society and create solutions to homelessness. Participation's really at our core, and that's because the experience of homelessness is really crucial in making decisions that affect lives.
Jenny, along with her teammates at Groundswell, had been working away when COVID hit and changed everything. Suddenly, it was a lot harder to hear back from the cohort of people they were trying to reach and work with. So they had an idea.
So the COVID monitoring project, as it was known, wanted to do something really innovative, and Groundswell started to work with On Our Radar, and they specialise in working with community journalists. So the project started by recruiting community reporters, all with experience of homelessness, and we supported them with training and gave them mobile phones to report on their stories about how COVID was affecting their lives.
Working with the organisation On Our Radar, they set up a platform to allow people who were experiencing homelessness to easily feed in reports on how the pandemic was affecting them. It was such a success that even after the initial focus on COVID, they decided to keep going. And so the Listen Up Hub was born.
Our reporters tell stories in the ways that they want to. So they might capture stories through quick audio messages. They might take films. They might use a range of methods to produce their stories. And those stories then come through to our team. And we look through the stories and we upload those onto our new homelessness hub. So every reporter on our homelessness hub has a profile, and their stories are showcased on the hub. And we share these widely with decision makers through our mailing list, through social media. We really want to elevate the voices of reporters. The stories that we get, they really challenge stereotypes of homelessness.
It's a great project, but one that's only as good as the reporters who take part. So who are they? One is a woman called Karen. She first heard of the project when a friend asked to talk to her.
I was interviewed by Steve, who is a friend of mine, and he interviewed me. That's how, it all started, really.
Karen had met this guy when they both attended the same group for alcohol addiction, and they'd remained friends. Steve was now part of the Groundswell project and was talking to people he knew about homelessness and issues surrounding it. And there was something about talking to Steve, someone who understood where she was coming from, that helped Karen open up.
It felt quite natural, because I knew Steve anyway, and we both understand addiction and recovery and all that. So I felt on par with him. You know, we were both on the same level.
This was the first time Karen had ever been interviewed, but she found she had a lot to talk about.
And it was in lockdown, and I was on the phone trying to get through to the doctors, and I couldn't get through. And they changed the format, so it was press this button, press that button, and then it kept cutting me off, and I was really getting irate. And Steve just said to me, "Oh, can I interview you on that?" You know.
Here's a clip from Karen's interview.
So, 8 a.m. Monday morning, I rang the doctors, only to be completely cut off. No explanation why I was cut off, just cut off. So I kept ringing back. And as I'm doing this, I'm getting more bloody angry. My anxiety was getting worse, you know. I'm in recovery, you know, I'm an alcoholic. In a couple of weeks, God willing, I'll be 5 years sober. But I have to be careful, you know, because it's the small pebbles that catch anyone in addiction that, you know, that we trip up. We can deal with the big boulders. It's the tiny little things in life that, you know, we have to be careful for.
Steve recorded the interview with Karen, and it was posted online on a Listen Up Hub's website. It was such a fun experience that Karen joined the project and started reporting on a range of things about homelessness and addiction. And as she did, she probed her own experience further. She began to understand more and more about her own life. Over time, she came to realise that she had experienced some forms of homelessness herself.
When I was in my teens, me and my dad, we really didn't get on. He was a very strict, you know, dad, and I was already drinking. When I look back, I was already drinking heavily. So I did a lot of sofa surfing. There was a lot of arguments and him throwing me out or I'd leave, you know. That was in my teens. And then in my mid-40s, obviously, you know, alcoholism is a progressive illness. So, you know, it never gets any easier, any better. So in my mid-40s, I was well into my addiction. And just through circumstances, again, with a boyfriend, he'd had enough of me. And I lived in the attic of a pub, which isn't ideal when you're an alcoholic. But I didn't class myself as being homeless because I wasn't on the street. And that's where, you know, I said in one of my reports, was I deluded or just ignorant? You know, maybe not ignorant, but uneducated about, you know, about homelessness. And I think that's a lot of people in society, they don't know. They've not been educated.
And the more she understood, the more she realised many of the stories that she saw online or in the news didn't reflect the complexity of that reality.
The majority of the population, we're misinformed with homelessness and how we interpret it. And it's like the blinkers are off now, and I'm sort of seeing the world for how it is. And I'm realising that, you know, some programmes and some news channels, they sort of, when they talk about homelessness, they just immediately, you see someone in a sleeping bag on the, you know, on the street, and that's not what homelessness is about. You know, there's thousands of reasons why that person's on the streets. But also, I didn't realise that people that are in prison and in rehabs and in refuges and places like that, they're all homeless, you know.
Soon, Karen was publishing story after story. One was about how the UK is moving towards a more and more cashless society, where we rely on contactless payments.
I just think if there was no cash about, and I put in report, you know, what about the man on the street that's asking for change? And also, what about the addict that needs to score? You know, drug dealers aren't going to take you know, sort of contactless money. So it just, I just felt again that the most vulnerable in society will suffer.
So Karen is really getting into the reporting, filing one story after another, all inspired by her own experiences. Another of the Listen Up reporters is a woman who we're calling Hannah.
And I am a 44-year-old disabled lady who's got lived experience of homelessness, domestic abuse, family court, social services. So I have a long-term severe complex mental illness. I have a personality disorder and I have complex PTSD, and I also have some physical illnesses. And I work with the Listen Up Project telling stories mainly about my own experience, but I intertwine the stories of the women that I work with and support.
Hannah has a wealth of experience, both from her own life and through the work she does.
I volunteer as an art therapist in an acute ward in a local psychiatric hospital. And many of the women there, if they weren't homeless before they went into hospital, they've been made homeless by the very fact of being sectioned. And also, it's important to add that pretty much every single one of the women are black, young and poor.
Hannah had been working on projects with Groundswell for a while. And then one day, one of the organisers mentioned this Listen Up project, a chance to report her own stories. Now, Hannah watches the news on TV, but sometimes she's frustrated by the focus that certain topics do or don't get. Take the war in Ukraine. Now, Hannah knows those people's suffering should be told. She's part Ukrainian herself, she says. But
the dominance of the news is a reminder of, first and foremost, people care about Ukrainians because they're white. And I say this as a white woman. And second of all, people do not care about poor people in this country. They never have and they never will. Because they see this as a rich island. And if you're poor in this country, it's your own fault.
And that poverty is something that Hannah thinks is missing from the dialogue, not just on the news, but in various different contexts.
I do a lot of work in mental health and around homelessness, and 99% of the time they're interlinked. And every single meeting that I sit on to give my lived experience, etc., poverty is never discussed. Poverty is never mentioned. Well, how, you know, everyone wrings their hands. How did this happen? We've no idea and we just don't know. And it's like, Poverty. Every single time. Because when you look at mental illness is not exclusively for the working class. Mental illness is a problem in the brain. But if you have money, not only do you more obviously pay for private therapy or nice holidays, you also might have a nanny. You might have a cleaner. You might have, your children might have after school clubs. You know, so they're a bit more entertained. You might be able to pay for some babysitting at the weekend. You know, at the time that I was very unwell, not being supported and being beaten up and raped a lot of the time, I tell it like it is, I was also really poor. And I was really struggling.
So Hannah has started reporting on these things, telling stories inspired by her own experiences and the people she works with and for. One brilliant report highlights the importance of libraries.
So I wrote a piece about my passion of libraries and how the government is trying to close libraries behind the back door. And I live in Brixton and the library is huge. And pre-COVID, the library was full of teenage black boys. Absolutely full of teenage black boys. The library and the council and the youth group did a fantastic campaign. They made a section and they filled it with books, but also what they knew a lot of teenage boys are reading is manga. So they have a massive manga section. and the boys are safe, not just from the gangs, but they're also safe from the police.
Here's a clip from that report that Hannah published.
I've gone there to use the internet and I haven't had any data on my phone, and I've been able to research where I can go to a food bank when I also haven't had food. I've gone there for human companionship after my children were taken and I was living alone in a bedsit in Wood Green. I've gone there to distract my mind when my mental health's been playing up, and the books have soothed me. The art, the poetry, the philosophy. I've had access to books in a way that I felt safe, not lingering around in Waterstones feeling guilty. Libraries are such an important part of our community and they are trying to close them by the back door.
The reaction to the story was so strong that she published a follow-up piece, exploring the idea further. Like Karen, working as a reporter has taught Hannah more about the relationship between journalist and interviewee, the power imbalance, even if unintentional, that exists in those relationships.
An awful lot of people don't take into account when working with people with mental illness that they're, regardless of any drug addiction, the prescription drugs have a very, you know, you often can't really, you're not really with it till about 11 o'clock, you know. You might wake up at 6 o'clock because of nightmares, but you might be groggy for the whole morning, you know. But that's a really embarrassing thing to explain. And I think one that more journalists should consider. I think the location of the interview, how does the person get there? How easy is it for them to get there?
But a little empathy and thought given to what the interviewee might be going through can go a long way to making it a comfortable, respectful experience.
Like, how did this person get here today? What was their journey to get here? Were they literally going down the back of the sofa for the bus fare? Did they have any breakfast? These questions are so important for journalists to ask before they speak to anybody. You know, and I also think that there is a lack of consideration given when journalists are in a rush and they turn up with their big Starbucks and their croissant in the paper bag. They're showing their wealth, you know. If you have a large coffee and a croissant, you know, it's probably about £5 or £6, which is a huge amount of money to someone who's poor. I think these things are so important and they're so often missed.
As well as producing their reports, Hannah and Karen are coming to learn more about how journalism can, and arguably should, be done. They keep going, talking to people, filing stories. But they're not just left to their own devices. That could get them into trouble with their reporting. Each journalist works with one of the organisers, who acts as a mentor. They record their report.
I record stories on my phone. I write stories. And then I read them out. I sometimes put in quotes from different people that are always anonymous. We have a group chat where we discuss ideas between each other.
Groundswell actually got me a little keyboard. So when I'm at home, I use the keyboard and type it up. I just do it on Notepad to start off with. Just jot down a few ideas randomly. Then I just go back to it time and time again and, you know, delete stuff, add stuff, change it about.
Once they are ready, the reporters send their recordings to the central hub.
And it's looked at in depth, you know. So my mentor will probably look at the grammar, punctuation, that type of thing, you know, and just polish it up for me. It's very well organised, even though it's lived experience. They also, you know, go through it really with a fine-tooth comb.
But what about those who say reporting should be clinical, objective, unemotional and reserved?
I would disagree. I think I personally love reading stories that I have no knowledge of, and it's a completely different world to me, and that person has some lived experience of that.
And I just feel that if you've actually lived through it, that report comes from your heart. What it does with me, it comes from within. you know, because I've been there, I've done it, you know, I can empathise with people. And I just think it's got a bit more clout.
Watching the stories go up online, be listened to, shared, acknowledged. Both women say it feels good.
It's really exciting. And then some of them have been shared on Twitter and had really good feedback.
For me, it's a bit of a wow moment because I've got quite low self-esteem. And a lot of people don't think that because I come across as being very confident. But I never actually feel good enough. So when I see these reports and I get some fantastic feedback, it's just really encouraging.
Karen knows what she hopes for the project.
You know, hopefully we will get the message across to the decision makers to make a change and you know, hopefully rid the country of homelessness, because it's inhumane. You know, our mission statement is to make people aware of homelessness and what it means and how people become homeless and change the stereotypes and everything.
Hannah has similar hopes.
What I hope to try to do is to tell stories that everybody can relate to and connect with, even if they don't have lived experience, because I want everyone to care about homelessness and domestic violence and racist police and different vulnerable groups. And most people don't care the things they don't understand and that they can't connect to. So what I want to try and do is to pull you in and say, this is my experience. Which part do you relate to? Because I need you all to understand that you too one day could, you know, thereby go the grace of God or whatever the expression is. But it's like most people don't realize that vulnerability and poverty and homelessness and mental health is shit that happens and shit that can happen to anybody. And when you feel very comfortable and smug in your life, you could be in for a rude awakening one day. And it's, you know, COVID was a little wake-up call for lots of people in their comfortable bubbles, right? A big wake-up call.
That's all for this episode of The Tip-Off. Do go to the Listen Up Hub. Take a look, a listen, a read of some of these amazing stories. You can even sign up to their mailing list to hear more. It's journalism, but done in a different way. This show is a co-production of Studio To Be. Our co-executive producers are Joaquim Alvarado and Ken Ikeda. Maeve McClendigan, that's me, created this podcast. I also handled audio editing and sound design on this episode. Dice Muse composed our theme tune. Claudia Meza makes original music for the show. And as always, stay tuned for more stories behind the headlines.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.